Frank given indefinite respite. The Atlanta Georgian, Monday, the 6th of October, 1913, page 1, columns 1 and 8. Hearing on new trial motion is postponed. Prejudice of jurors charge D by many. Hensley, accused, threatens suit against maker of affidavit, denies he was biased. With Leo M. Frank's sentence respited indefinitely and the hearing on his lawyer's motion postponed for a week, new sensations were sprung in the fight for the convicted factory superintendent's life with the revelation Saturday of the contents of a mass of affidavits charging prejudice against A.H. Hensley and Marcellus Johenning, members of the trial jury. Most of the fire is directed at Hensley, who is charged by many persons with having expressed violent feelings on the case before he was chosen as a juror. He is accused of having expressed his conviction of Frank's guilt and his eagerness to see him hanged, and to have referred in profane terms to the prisoner's race. The hearing of the motion for a new trial was postponed by Judge Roan at the request of Solicitor General Hugh M. Dorsey when the case was called shortly after 9 o'clock Saturday morning. The solicitor said he needed time to look into the volumes of contentions made by the defense in the pleas setting forth 115 reasons why Frank should get a new trial. Judge Roan put the hearing off until next Saturday and announced that he would be ready to grant the solicitor more time then if necessary. Delay is secured quickly. The order for an indefinite stay was issued in less than 10 minutes after the hearing of the motion for a new trial was taken up. I have not had time in which to prepare my reply to the motion, as it was only presented to me a day or two ago and is quite lengthy, said Solicitor Dorsey. Therefore, I am going to ask your honor to postpone this hearing until I have time to complete my work on it. It is my desire to complete the case as quickly as possible, and it is imperative that it should be. The work of the Court of Appeals is hinging on this case in a way, as you are being delayed in taking up your duties there until after you have heard this motion. I think that possibly I can complete my reply by next Saturday, but in the event I find this impossible, I would like for your honor to grant a further delay. Attorneys Arnold and Rosser said this would be agreeable to them, gets copies of charges. Dorsey asked that he be furnished with all of the depositions which the defense had taken, and Attorney Rosser advised that he would furnish them to the solicitor sometime during the day. I think I have copies of all of them in my office, and will give them to you today, said Mr. Rosser to the solicitor.
In the event we obtain any new ones, we will also submit them to you, he added. I will set this hearing for 9:30 o'clock next Saturday morning, then, said Judge Roan. I trust, however, Mr. Dorsey, that you will be prepared by that time.
The judge then instructed the cleric to issue an order directing Sheriff Mangum to indefinitely stay the X page 7, column 1. Frank hearing delayed, prisoner gets respite, two jurors under fire continued from page 1. Cution of Leo M. Frank, which had been set for October 10th. Following the hearing, Attorney Rosser furnished copies of most of the depositions which have been taken by the defense. The ones lacking are those made by C.P. Stowe of Atlanta and John M. Holmes, Shy Gray, and S.M. Johnson of Sparta Gay, copies of which are expected to be given the solicitor during the day. Points made in depositions. In the depositions given the solicitor Saturday morning, juror A.H. Hensley is charged with having made remarks showing him to be biased at the Elks Club in Atlanta on a train between Atlanta and Experiment Gay and in front of a livery stable at Albany Gay. These expressions were to the effect that he believed there was no doubt of Frank's guilt, that he was glad Frank had been indicted, that his neck should be broken, that Frank should be lynched, and that if he were on the jury, he would hang him sure. Some of the depositions charged that Johenning had made the remark that Frank was undoubtedly guilty and that he had spoken forcibly and positively. Depositions furnished the solicitor were made by H.C. Lovenhart, Mrs. J.G. Lovenhart, Miss Miriam Lovenhart, S. Aaron, Mac Farkas, R.K. Green, J.J. Nunnally, W.L. Picker, J.A. Lehman, Samuel Borston, Mrs. A. Sherman, Samson K., B.M. K., Miss Martha K., Charles J. Moore, W.B. Kate, J.H.G. Cochran, and H.G. Williams. Charge jury heard cheers. These depositions alleged that the cheering by the crowd outside of the courthouse was plainly audible to the jury, and that it would have been plainly impossible for the members of the jury not to have heard it. One man charges that a man in the courtroom seized the hand of one of the jurors and spoke to him, and was sharply reprimanded by Chief Deputy Sheriff Plenty Minor. One deposition charges Juror Smith with having gazed out of a third-floor window in the Kimball House at the cheering crowd on Pryor Street. The additional affidavits, besides those of Stow and the three Sparta men charging Juror Hensley with having displayed prejudice, were made by R.L. Gremmer and Mac Farkas of Albany, Julian A. Lehman of Atlanta, and Sam Aaron of Atlanta. "There can be no doubt but that Frank is guilty," are the words credited to Hensley by Gremm and Farkas. They charge him with making this assertion in front of the Sam Farkas livery stable in Albany some time prior to the trial. They assert that they know Hensley well, and further identify him as the man making this remark by pictures of Juror Hensley, which appeared in the Georgian. Another instance cited. On June 2nd, Juror Hensley is charged with remarking on a train that Frank is as guilty as a D-dog and ought to have neck broke. Julian A. Lehman makes that deposition, charging the remark was made on a train between Atlanta and Experiment Gay. He charges him with having made practically the same remark on June 20th. In a deposition by Samuel Aaron, remarks made at the Elks Club in Atlanta 2 days after the grand jury indicted Frank are credited to Hensley. Aaron asserts that at the time the remarks were made, he did not know Hensley's name, but learned it later. The words he alleged were spoken by Hensley were, "I am glad they indicted Jew. They ought to take him out and lynch him, and if I get on the jury, I will hang that Jew, sure." The depositions charging Joe Henning with showing bias were made by Mrs. Jenny G. Lovenhart, her daughter, Miss Miriam Lovenhart, and H.C. Lovenhart. Tell of words to juror. Mrs. Lovenhart and Miss Lovenhart assert that they met Joe Henning on Forsyth Street one day in May, and that he expressed belief in Frank's guilt, and that his statements were made forcibly and positively. H.C. Lovenhart, who is connected with the Hodges Broomworks, asserted that Joe Henning had also expressed to him his belief in Frank's guilt. W.P. Neal made an affidavit declaring he saw a man in the courtroom seize one of the jurors' hands and speak to him while the jury was passing out of the courtroom. Neal asserts that Chief Deputy Sheriff Plenty Minor saw the act and threatened to put a man out of the courtroom, charging him with speaking to jurymen. "I could not understand what the man said," Neal states in the affidavit. Neal also asserted that he was in the courtroom 2 days of the trial and that he heard the crowd in the street cheer Dorsey, and that the cheering was plainly audible to the jury. Jury could hear cheering. Attorney Charles J. Moore asserts that he was in his office at number 301 Kaiser Building at 6 p.m. August 22nd and heard the crowd cheer Solicitor Dorsey as he left the courthouse. "The jury was not 50 feet from the entrance of the courthouse during the demonstration," the affidavit reads. He also told of the cheering of August 23rd, saying the jury was also close enough to hear. The deposition also states that Moore heard many threats of violence to Frank in the event of an acquittal. It also named two men whom he charged with continuously loitering around the courthouse during the trial. BMK of 264 South Pryor Street, in his deposition, charges that while he was driving his father's automobile, in company with his mother, Mrs. Rose K., and his brother, Samson K., between 8 and 8:30 o'clock Saturday night, August 23rd, he saw the Frank jury pass from East Fair into South Pryor Street and proceed to the Kimball House, and that 7 or 8 men walked alongside of them for several blocks and chatted with members of the jury. Bet he would be selected. The other affidavits told of the cheering which greeted Solicitor Dorsey on different occasions, and asserted the cheering was plainly audible to the jury. The affidavits of the Sparta men Shull Gray, John M. Holmes, and Johnson all charged that the Frank case was discussed in the office of Walton Holmes Insurance Man in Sparta. They declare that in the course of the conversation, Hensley declared he knew Frank was guilty. They say he expressed his convictions firmly and emphatically. The remarks were made, it is said, after Hensley had been drawn as one of the talesmen in the case, and Gray says Hensley declared, "I'll bet a dollar I am chosen on that jury." Hensley arrives in city. Mr. Hensley, who is a traveling salesman with headquarters now in Barnesville, Gay, arrived in Atlanta Friday afternoon. He had read reports of the attack made upon himself and Marcellus Johanning, another of the jurors, in the motion filed by Frank's attorneys for a new trial, he said, and came to Atlanta to brand the accusations, insofar as he personally knew, as infamous falsehoods. Chief of the statements purported to have been made by Hensley before he was chosen as a member of the Frank jury was that averred by Mr. Stow, who is organizer of the Mason's annuity and well-known business residing at number 115 Holderness Street. Hensley said to me before the triad, "I believe Frank is guilty and would like to be in a position to break his neck," Mr. Stow told a Georgian reporter. False in every detail. "I hardly know this man, Stow," declared Hensley, "and have not even seen him for 4 months. I am positive that I never discussed the Frank case with him in any of its phases, nor expressed my opinion of the man's guilt or innocence." Mr. Hensley was shown the statements made by Stauff as printed exclusively in the Georgian Friday. "I brand the entire thing as false in every detail," he said. The former juror's attention was then called to the depositions made by Holmes, Johnson, and Gray of Sparta. These depositions were sworn to before J.M. Lewis, a notary of that town. "I recall having met Holmes and Gray," Hensley said, "and it is possible that I became acquainted with Johnson on one of my trips, but I never mentioned the Frank case to them, nor did I ever express an opinion on it. If these men say that I did, they are lying." Jurors' scores, his accusers. "I want to say now," continued Mr. Hensley, "that in casting my ballot for the conviction of Frank, I did so in accordance with the dictation of conscience. I did my duty, pure and simple, and when these men swear that I did not, as they are reported to have done, they are all liars. I am going to investigate this matter, and if the reports are true, I will bring legal action against these men. They are trying to prove me a perjurer, and I believe I have the basis of a good case against them. They will have to prove their assertions or take the consequences. Page 2, columns 1, 7, and 8. Page 2, column 1, renew attack on Frank juror. Page 2, column 7, factory men oppose regulating measure. Though some interesting happenings at the meeting of the City Council Monday afternoon were forestalled by the determination of Carlos H. Mason not to run again for police commissioner, the introduction of an ordinance by Councilman Claude L. Ashley to regulate factories employing women and girls will give the members something to do. No opposition to the ordinance by councilmen is likely, but protests from factory men are expected. Page 2, column 8. Battle for New Trial Center, S on Bias. Dorsey prepares to support Juror Hensley's denial of any prejudicial statement. The extreme thoroughness with which the attorneys for Leo M. Frank have set about substantiating their charge of prejudice and bias against A.H. Hensley, one of the 12 jurors who declared Frank guilty of murder, made it evident Monday that the lawyers will wage their fight around this one instance of alleged unfairness as so glaring as to constitute in itself and alone a sufficient ground for a new trial. Many persons with whom Hensley talked before the trial were interviewed by agents of attorney Rosser and Arnold. One deposition was bulwarked by another until the lawyers considered they had made out a clear case of prejudice and bias against Hensley. Without the additional force lent by the more than 100 other reasons presented in their amended motion for a new trial, they were confident that they had obtained an unassailable ground for a retrial of the convicted man. Solicitor Dorsey is preparing for a determined fight against their contention. He believes that Hensley has been misrepresented. He is prepared to take the word of Hensley himself that he uttered no statements to the effect that he considered Frank guilty and would like to have a part in bringing about his hanging. Sparta men make reply. Hensley's repeated denials of the alleged conversations brought a reply Monday from three of the Sparta men who recently made depositions that they had overheard remarks of the nature mentioned. They prepared a signed statement in which they reiterated their allegations of prejudice and bias against Hensley and declared that Hensley must have been misquoted in his repudiation of the remarks. The statement was signed by John M. Holmes of Holmes & Walker, an insurance and buggy firm, S.M. Johnson, cashier of the firm, and Shy Gray. All assert they were present when Hensley's reported conversation in regard to the guilt of Frank took place. Practically tried Frank. The letter read, "You must recall in Mr. Holmes' office on the day stated, and in the presence of the undersigned, we had discussed the Frank case and practically tried him, as it were, and that in the discussion, you not only said that Frank was as guilty as, but you had much to say about Frank being a moral degenerate. Your exact language we cannot use, and further stated that you were drawn as a juror. We have no disposition to injure you or to make public your statement, as two of the writers, Gray and Holmes, have known you and your family for many years, and we do not know how the attorneys were acquainted with the fact of this conversation, but your remark was common talk in the town, where there are a number of people who could have given the information to the attorneys. We declined to make a voluntary affidavit in the matter and said nothing until forced to by the court. But let us assure you that the reluctance to testify in no way changes the fact, and you shall not be permitted to make statements in the public press denouncing us as liars in order to protect yourself from the criticism you have justly deserved. We await your answer. J.M. Holmes, S.M. Johnson, Shy Gray, page 3, columns 2, 4, and 8, page 3, column 2, Factory Men Oppose Regulating Measure." Though some interesting happenings at the meeting of the City Council Monday afternoon were forestalled by the determination of Carlos H. Mason not to run again for police commissioner, the introduction of an ordinance by Councilman Claude L. Ashley to regulate factories employing women and girls will give the members something to do. No opposition to the ordinance by councilmen is likely, but protests from factory men are expected. Page 3, column 4. Frank Juror again attacked by Sparta men. Page 3, column 8, fight for new trial center S on bias. Dorsey prepares to support Juror Hensley's denial of any prejudicial statement. The extreme thoroughness with which the attorneys for Leo M. Frank have set about substantiating their charge of prejudice and bias against A.H. Hensley, one of the 12 jurors who declared Frank guilty of murder, made it evident Monday that the lawyers will wage their fight around this one instance of alleged unfairness as so glaring as to constitute in itself and alone a sufficient ground for a new trial. Many persons with whom Hensley talked before the trial were interviewed by agents of attorney Rosser and Arnold. One deposition was bulwarked by another until the lawyers considered they had made out a clear case of prejudice and bias against Hensley. Without the additional force lent by the more than 100 other reasons presented in their amended motion for a new trial, they were confident that they had obtained an unassailable ground for a retrial of the convicted man. Solicitor Dorsey is preparing for a determined fight against their contention. He believes that Hensley has been misrepresented. He is prepared to take the word of Hensley himself that he uttered no statements to the effect that he considered Frank guilty and would like to have a part in bringing about his hanging. Sparta men make reply. Hensley's repeated denials of the alleged conversations brought a reply Monday from three of the Sparta men who recently made depositions that they had overheard remarks of the nature mentioned. They prepared a signed statement, in which they reiterated their allegations of prejudice and bias against Hensley and declared that Hensley must have been misquoted in his repudiation of the remarks. The statement was signed by John M. Holmes, of Holmes & Walker, an insurance and buggy firm, S.M. Johnson, cashier of the firm, and Shi Gray. All assert they were present when Hensley's reported conversation in regard to the guilt of Frank took place. Practically tried Frank. The letter read, "You must recall in Mr. Holmes' office on the day stated, and in the presence of the undersigned, we had discussed the Frank case and practically tried him, as it were, and that in the discussion, you not only said that Frank was as guilty as, but you had much to say about Frank being a moral degenerate, your exact language we cannot use, and further stated that you were drawn as a juror. We have no disposition to injure you or to make public your statement, as two of the writers, Gray and Holmes, have known you and your family for many years, and we do not know how the attorneys were acquainted with the fact of this conversation. But your remark was common talk in the town, where there are a number of people who could have given the information to the attorneys. We declined to make a voluntary affidavit in the matter and said nothing until forced to by the court. but let us assure you that the reluctance to testify in no way changes the fact, and you shall not be permitted to make statements in the public press denouncing us as liars in order to protect yourself from the criticism you have justly deserved. We await your answer. J.M. Holmes, S.M. Johnson, She Gray, page 4, columns 1 and 8, page 4, column 1, more attacks on Frank Juror, page 4, column 8, Dorsey at work to combat T-charge defense, claims it has new and positive proof of bias, accusations against Hensley A.H. Hensley of the jury that convicted Leo M. Frank made his bitterly denunciator remarks against the defendant in the hearing of a far greater number of persons than already have made depositions, according to information in the possession of Frank's attorneys. While the prisoner's lawyers are busy building up their plea, Solicitor General Hugh Dorsey is working ceaselessly preparing to demolish their arguments for a new trial. We have the names of a great many other persons to whom Hensley expressed his opinion of Frank's guilt and his hope that he would have the opportunity to assist in convicting him, said Reuben R. Arnold, of counsel for Frank, Monday. These persons would be called on to tell the truth in respect to Hensley's attitude before the trial were it not for their evident reluctance to incur the enmity of Hensley and the fact that we already have the sworn statements of a sufficient number of reliable persons to prove conclusively that Hensley was guilty of making the biased and prejudiced remarks. Fear. They'll harm Hensley. We are in possession of the facts, however, and if we find it necessary, we will use them. Even the men from whom we have taken statements have been reluctant to give them. They acquiesced in making a statement of the facts only after they had been summoned by a process of law. They did not wish to harm Hensley, but they had overheard his unmistakable condemnation of Frank, and there was nothing left for them to do when they were called to narrate the facts of the case. Hensley's prejudice and that of Joe Henning alone constitute a situation that is sufficient to form a basis for a new trial. It is unthinkable that a man should be sentenced to death when the two men at least were violently biased against him before a word of evidence was heard. Solicitor Dorsey and his assistant, A.E. Stevens, are engaged in prep answer to the motion for a new trial. The lawyers for the defense are prepared to argue the motion before Judge Roan next Saturday. The solicitor is expected to be ready for the argument, although he has an immense task in reviewing all of the reasons presented by the defense. Grand jury session delayed. The meeting of the Fulton grand jury has been postponed indefinitely, pending the final disposition of the Frank case, according to information at the solicitor's office Monday. Coupled with this information was the announcement that the decks had been cleared for the case. Absolutely nothing, not even the grand jury, it is said, will be allowed to interfere with the work of Mr. Dorsey and Mr. Stevens in summing up the final evidence which will be used to combat the arguments of the defense for a new trial. In the meantime, the courts are becoming clogged and the grand jury faces a heavy docket, including a number of important cases. The extreme thoroughness with which the attorneys for Frank continued on page 2, column 5. Page 10, column 5, Frank defense claims new bias proof. Solicitor Dorsey. Meanwhile, Colex Data Combat, the charges against Hensley continued from page 1. Have set about substantiating their charge of prejudice and bias against A.H. Hensley on the 12 jurors who declared Frank guilty of murder, made it evident Monday that the lawyers will wage their fight around this one instance of alleged unfairness as to constitute in itself and alone a sufficient ground for a new trial. Many persons with whom Hensley talked before the trial were interviewed by agents of attorneys Rosser and Arnold. One deposition was bulwarked by another until the lawyers considered they had made out a clear case of prejudice and bias against Hensley. Without the additional force lent by the more than 100 other reasons presented in their amended motion for a new trial, they were confident that they had obtained an unassailable ground for a retrial of the convicted man. Solicitor Dorsey is preparing for a determined fight against their contention. He believes that Hensley has been misrepresented. He is prepared to take the word of Hensley himself that he uttered no statements to the effect that he considered Frank guilty and would like to have a part in bringing about his hanging. Sparta men make reply. Hensley's repeated denials of the alleged conversations brought a reply Monday from three of the Sparta men who recently made depositions that they had overheard remarks of the nature mentioned. They prepared a signed statement in which they reiterated their allegations of prejudice and bias against Hensley and declared that Hensley must have been misquoted in his repudiation of the remarks. The statement was signed by Joan M. Holmes of Holmes & Walker, an insurance and buggy firm, S.M. Johnson, cashier of the firm, and She Gray. All assert they were present when Hensley's reported conversation in regard to the guilt of Frank took place. Practically tried Frank. The letter read, "You must recall in Mr. Holmes's office on the day stated, and in the presence of the undersigned, we all discussed the Frank case and practically tried him, as it were, and that in the discussion, you not only said that Frank was as guilty as, but you had so much to say about Frank's being a moral degenerate, your exact language we cannot use, and further stated that you were drawn as a juror. We have no disposition to injure you or to make public your statement, as two of the writers, Gray and Holmes, have known you and your family for many years, and we do not know how the attorneys were acquainted with the fact of this conversation, but your remark was common talk in the town, where there are a number of people who could have given the information to the attorneys. We declined to make a voluntary affidavit in the matter and said nothing until forced to by the court. But let us assure you that the reluctance to testify in no way changes the fact, and you shall not be permitted to make statements in the public press denouncing us as liars in order to protect yourself from the criticism you have justly deserved. We await your answer. J.M. Holmes, S.M. Johnson, Shy Gray, County refuses to pay Newt Lee. Claims filed by attorneys for Newt Lee, the Negro witness in the Frank case, for recovery for time lost while confined in the county jail, were turned down by the Board of County Commissioners in monthly session Monday morning. The vote of the board was unanimous, following motion of General Clifford Anderson, who declared the county owed nothing to Newt Lee, inasmuch as he was held at the instance of the state. The Negro was held in the county as a witness for about 3 months. Previous to the decision of the board, a communication was read from attorney Luther Rosser, who refused to give an opinion as to the claims of Lee on the grounds that he was unqualified because of his connection with the case. The county commissioners disposed of several important matters Monday morning, including the Roxbury Crossing matter providing for the construction of an underpass by the Southern Railway and the widening of the roadway 40 feet. The board also heard the petition of 25 citizens, offering to donate a 70-foot roadway about 6 miles in length, extending along the Chattahoochee River from Paces Ferry to Johnson Ferry Road. The petition was referred to the three local road commissioners, who will report on the feasibility of the proposed roadway. An offer of the Piedmont chapter of the Daughters of the Revolution to place a Georgia state flag on the new courthouse was also accepted, with thanks and plans made for a flag-raising day when the new building is completed. The meeting Monday morning was postponed from last week, pending the return of Commissioners Smith, Anderson, and Wynn from Detroit. Page 10, Column 6. Factory men oppose regulating measure. Though some interesting happenings at the meeting of the City Council Monday afternoon were forestalled by the determination of Carlos H. Mason not to run again for police commissioner, the introduction of an ordinance by Councilman Claude L. Ashley to regulate factories employing women and girls will give the members something to do. No opposition to the ordinance by councilmen is likely, but protests from factory men are expected. Page 5, Columns 4, 6, and 8. Page 5, Column 4, New Attack on Frank Juror. Page 5, Column 6, Factory Men Oppose Regulating Measure. Though some interesting happenings at the meeting of the City Council Monday afternoon were forestalled by the determination of Carlos H. Mason not to run again for police commissioner, the introduction of an ordinance by Councilman Claude L. Ashley to regulate factories employing women and girls will give the members something to do. No opposition to the ordinance by councilmen is likely, but protests from factory men are expected. Page 5, Column 8. Dorsey at work to combat charge A. Hensley of the jury that convicted Leo M. Frank made his bitterly denunciator remarks against the defendant in the hearing of a far greater number of persons than already have made depositions, according to information in the possession of Frank's attorneys. While the prisoner's lawyers are busy building up their plea, Solicitor General Hugh Dorsey is working ceaselessly, preparing to demolish their arguments for a new trial. We have the names of a great many other persons to whom Hensley expressed his opinion of Frank's guilt and his hope that he would have the opportunity to assist in convicting him, said Reuben R. Arnold, of counsel for Frank Monday. These persons would be called on to tell the truth in respect to Hensley's attitude before the trial, were it not for their evident reluctance to incur the enmity of Hensley, and the fact that we already have the sworn statements of a sufficient number of reliable persons to prove conclusively that Hensley was guilty of making the biased and prejudiced remarks. Fear. They'll harm Hensley. We are in possession of the facts, however, and if we find it necessary, we will use them. Even the men from whom we have taken statements have been reluctant to give them. They acquiesced in making a statement of the facts only after they had been summoned by a process of law. They did not wish to harm Hensley, but they had overheard his unmistakable condemnation of Frank, and there was nothing left for them to do when they were called to narrate the facts of the case. Hensley's prejudice and that of Joe Henning alone constitute a situation that is sufficient to form a basis for a new trial. It is unthinkable that a man should be sentenced to death when the two men at least were violently biased against him before a word of evidence was heard. Solicitor Dorsey and his assistant, A.E. Stevens, are engaged in prep answer to the motion for a new trial. The lawyers for the defense are prepared to argue the motion before Judge Roan next Saturday. The solicitor is expected to be ready for the argument, although he has an immense task in reviewing all of the reasons presented by the defense. Grand jury session delayed. The meeting of the Fulton grand jury has been postponed indefinitely, pending the final disposition of the Frank case, according to information at the solicitor's office Monday. Coupled with this information was the announcement that the decks had been cleared for the case. Absolutely nothing, not even the grand jury, it is said, will be allowed to interfere with the work of Mr. Dorsey and Mr. Stevens in summing up the final evidence which will be used to continued on page 2, column 4, page 11, column 4, Frank defense claims new bias proof continued from page 1, combat the arguments of the defense for a new trial. In the meantime, the courts are becoming clogged and the grand jury faces a heavy docket, including a number of important cases. The extreme thoroughness with which the attorneys for Frank have set about substantiating their charge of prejudice and bias against A.H. Hensley, one of the 12 jurors who declared Frank guilty of murder, made it evident Monday that the lawyers will age their fight around this one instance of alleged unfairness as so glaring as to constitute in itself and alone a sufficient ground for a new trial. The extreme thoroughness with which the attorneys for Leo M. Frank have set about substantiating their charge of prejudice and bias against A.H. Hensley, one of the 12 jurors who declared Frank guilty of murder, made it evident Monday that the lawyers will wage their fight around this one instance of alleged unfairness as so glaring as to constitute in itself and alone a sufficient ground for a new trial. Many persons with whom Hensley talked before the trial were interviewed by agents of Attorney Rosser and Arnold. One deposition was bulwarked by another until the lawyers considered they had made out a clear case of prejudice and bias against Hensley. Without the additional force lent by the more than 100 other reasons presented in their amended motion for a new trial, they were confident that they had obtained an unassailable ground for a retrial of the convicted man. Solicitor Dorsey is preparing for a determined fight against their contention. He believes that Hensley has been misrepresented. He is prepared to take the word of Hensley himself that he uttered no statements to the effect that he considered Frank guilty and would like to have a part in bringing about his hanging. Sparta men make reply. Hensley's repeated denials of the alleged conversations brought a reply Monday from three of the Sparta men who recently made depositions that they had overheard remarks of the nature mentioned. They prepared a signed statement in which they reiterated their allegations of prejudice and bias against Hensley and declared that Hensley must have been misquoted in his repudiation of the remarks. The statement was signed by John M. Holmes of Holmes & Walker, an insurance and buggy firm, S.M. Johnson, cashier of the firm, and Shee Gray. All assert they were present when Hensley's reported conversation in regard to the guilt of Frank took place, practically tried Frank. The letter read, "You must recall in Mr. Holmes' office on the day stated, and in the presence of the undersigned, we had discussed the Frank case and practically tried him, as it were, and that in the discussion, you not only said that Frank was as guilty as, but you had much to say about Frank being a moral degenerate, your exact language we cannot use, and further stated that you were drawn as a juror. We have no disposition to injure you or to make public your statement, as two of the writers, Gray and Holmes, have known you and your family for many years, and we do not know how the attorneys were acquainted with the fact of this conversation. But your remark was common talk in the town, where there are a number of people who could have given the information to the attorneys. We declined to make a voluntary affidavit in the matter and said nothing until forced to by the court. But let us assure you that the reluctance to testify in no way changes the fact, and you shall not be permitted to make statements in the public press denouncing us as liars in order to protect yourself from the criticism you have justly deserved. We await your answer. J.M. Holmes, S.M. Johnson, Shy Gray, County refuses to pay Newt Lee. Claims filed by attorneys for Newt Lee, the Negro witness in the Frank case, for recovery for time lost while confined in the county jail, were turned down by the Board of County Commissioners in monthly session Monday morning. The vote of the board was unanimous, following motion of General Clifford Anderson, who declared the county owed nothing to Newt Lee, inasmuch as he was held at the instance of the state. The Negro was held in the county as a witness for about 3 months. Previous to the decision of the board, a communication was read from Attorney Luther Rosser, who refused to give an opinion as to the claims of Lee on the grounds that he was unqualified because of his connection with the case. The county commissioners disposed of several important matters Monday morning, including the Roxbury Crossing matter, providing for the construction of an underpass by the Southern Railway, and the widening of the roadway 40 feet. The board also heard the petition of 25 citizens offering to donate a 70-foot roadway about 6 miles in length, extending along the Chattahoochee River from Paces Ferry to Johnson Ferry Road. The petition was referred to the three local road commissioners, who will report on the feasibility of the proposed roadway. An offer of the Piedmont chapter of the Daughters of the Revolution to place a Georgia state flag on the new courthouse was also accepted, with thanks and plans made for a flag-raising day when the new building is completed. The meeting Monday morning was postponed from last week, pending the return of Commissioners Smith, Anderson, and Wynn from Detroit. Page 6, Column 4, Dorsey at Work to Comba T. Charge. A. Hensley, of the jury that convicted Leo M. Frank, made his bitterly denunciator remarks against the defendant in the hearing of a far greater number of persons than already have made depositions, according to information in the possession of Frank's attorneys. While the prisoner's lawyers are busy building up their plea, Solicitor General Hugh Dorsey is working ceaselessly preparing to demolish their arguments for a new trial. We have the names of a great many other persons to whom Hensley expressed his opinion of Frank's guilt and his hope that he would have the opportunity to assist in convicting him, said Reuben R. Arnold of counsel for Frank Monday. These persons would be called on to tell the truth in respect to Hensley's attitude before the trial, were it not for their evident reluctance to incur the enmity of Hensley and the fact that we already have the sworn statements of a sufficient number of reliable persons to prove conclusively that Hensley was guilty of making the biased and prejudiced remarks. Fear. They'll harm Hensley. We are in possession of the facts, however, and if we find it necessary, we will use them. Even the men from whom we have taken statements have been reluctant to give them. They acquiesced in making a statement of the facts only after they had been summoned by a process of law. They did not wish to harm Hensley, but they had overheard his unmistakable condemnation of Frank, and there was nothing left for them to do when they were called to narrate the facts of the case. Hensley's prejudice and that of Joe Henning alone constitute a situation that is sufficient to form a basis for a new trial. It is unthinkable that a man should be sentenced to death when the two men at least were violently biased against him before a word of evidence was heard. Solicitor Dorsey and his assistant, A.E. Stevens, are engaged in prep answer to the motion for a new trial. The lawyers for the defense are prepared to argue the motion before Judge Roan next Saturday. The solicitor is expected to be ready for the argument, although he has an immense task in reviewing all of the reasons presented by the defense. grand jury session delayed. The meeting of the Fulton grand jury has been postponed indefinitely, pending the final disposition of the Frank case, according to information at the solicitor's office Monday. Coupled with this information was the announcement that the decks had been cleared for the case. Absolutely nothing, not even the grand jury, it is said, will be allowed to interfere with the work of Mr. Dorsey and Mr. Stevens in summing up the final evidence which will be used to continue on page 2, column 4. Page 11, column 4. Frank defense claims new bias proof continued from page 1. Combat the arguments of the defense for a new trial. In the meantime, the courts are becoming clogged and the grand jury faces a heavy docket, including a number of important cases. The extreme thoroughness with which the attorneys for Frank have set about substantiating their charge of prejudice and bias against A.H. Hensley, one of the 12 jurors who declared Frank guilty of murder, made it evident Monday that the lawyers will age their fight around this one instance of alleged unfairness as so glaring as to constitute in itself and alone a sufficient ground for a new trial. The extreme thoroughness with which the attorneys for Leo M. Frank have set about substantiating their charge of prejudice and bias against A.H. Hensley, one of the 12 jurors who declared Frank guilty of murder, made it evident Monday that the lawyers will wage their fight around this one instance of alleged unfairness as so glaring as to constitute in itself and alone a sufficient ground for a new trial. Many persons with whom Hensley talked before the trial were interviewed by agents of attorney Rosser and Arnold. One deposition was bulwarked by another until the lawyers considered they had made out a clear case of prejudice and bias against Hensley. Without the additional force lent by the more than 100 other reasons presented in their amended motion for a new trial, they were confident that they had obtained an unassailable ground for a retrial of the convicted man. Solicitor Dorsey is preparing for a determined fight against their contention. He believes that Hensley has been misrepresented. He is prepared to take the word of Hensley himself that he uttered no statements to the effect that he considered Frank guilty and would like to have a part in bringing about his hanging. Sparta men make reply. Hensley's repeated denials of the alleged conversations brought a reply Monday from three of the Sparta men who recently made depositions that they had overheard remarks of the nature mentioned. They prepared a signed statement in which they reiterated their allegations of prejudice and bias against Hensley and declared that Hensley must have been misquoted in his repudiation of the remarks. The statement was signed by John M. Holmes of Holmes & Walker, an insurance and buggy firm, S.M. Johnson, cashier of the firm, and Shi Gray. All assert they were present when Hensley's reported conversation in regard to the guilt of Frank took place. Practically tried Frank. The letter read, "You must recall in Mr. Holmes' office on the day stated and in the presence of the undersigned, we had discussed the Frank case and practically tried him, as it were, and that in the discussion you not only said that Frank was as guilty as, but you had much to say about Frank being a moral degenerate, your exact language we cannot use, and further stated that you were drawn as a juror. We have no disposition to injure you or to make public your statement as two of the writers, Gray and Holmes, have known you and your family for many years, and we do not know how the attorneys were acquainted with the fact of this conversation, but your remark was common talk in the town, where there are a number of people who could have given the information to the attorneys. We declined to make a voluntary affidavit in the matter and said nothing until forced to by the court, but let us assure you that the reluctance to testify in no way changes the fact, and you shall not be permitted to make statements in the public press denouncing us as liars in order to protect yourself from the criticism you have justly deserved. We await your answer. J.M. Holmes, S.M. Johnson, Shi Gray, County refuses to pay Newt Lee. Claims filed by attorneys for Newt Lee, the Negro witness in the Frank case, for recovery for time lost while confined in the county jail, were turned down by the Board of County Commissioners in monthly session Monday morning. The vote of the board was unanimous, following motion of General Clifford Anderson, who declared the county owed nothing to Newt Lee, inasmuch as he was held at the instance of the state. The Negro was held in the county as a witness for about 3 months. Previous to the decision of the board, a communication was read from attorney Luther Rosser, who refused to give an opinion as to the claims of Lee on the grounds that he was unqualified because of his connection with the case. The county commissioners disposed of several important matters Monday morning, including the Roxbury Crossing matter providing for the construction of an underpass by the Southern Railway and the widening of the roadway 40 feet. The board also heard the petition of 25 citizens offering to donate a 70-foot roadway about 6 miles in length, extending along the Chattahoochee River from Pace's Ferry to Johnson Ferry Road. The petition was referred to the three local road commissioners, who will report on the feasibility of the proposed roadway. An offer of the Piedmont chapter of the Daughters of the Revolution to place a Georgia state flag on the new courthouse was also accepted with thanks and plans made for a flag-raising day when the new building is completed. The meeting Monday morning was postponed from last week, pending the return of Commissioners Smith, Anderson, and Wynn from Detroit. Page 11, Column 6. Factory men oppose regulating measure. Though some interesting happenings at the meeting of the City Council Monday afternoon were forestalled by the determination of Carlos H. Mason not to run again for police commissioner, the introduction of an ordinance by Councilman Claude L. Ashley to regulate factories employing women and girls will give the members something to do. No opposition to the ordinance by councilmen is likely, but protests from factory men are expected. Page 13, Column 2. Governor Slayton personally investigates and verifies the circulation of the Georgian and Hearst's Sunday American. Daily Sunday Georgian American, October 4, 1913. At the request of the management of the Atlanta Georgian and the Sunday American, I personally examined on Friday afternoon their various circulation statements in detail. This work required some time, but it was willingly given, because I regard these newspapers as enterprises of which all Georgia should be proud. The figures the papers furnish, under oath, to the postal authorities show a marvelous growth for the time the Georgian and Sunday American have been in Mr. Hearst's hands, particularly the Sunday American, which is only 6 months old. These circulation figures I have checked up and verified in person. I have examined the sworn statements of the circulation and the cashier of the Georgian Corporation and cross-questioned them in detail about the circulation figures. I believe the figures to be absolutely correct. Purely from a businessman's viewpoint, both the Georgian and the Sunday American, in points of quality and quantity of circulation, should be, and I have no doubt are, highly satisfactory and effective advertising mediums. Certainly, they are most excellent newspapers and should commend themselves to merchants for business purposes. The fine circulation showings furnish me ample foundation for warm congratulations. I sincerely wish for Mr. Hearst and his Georgia newspapers the fullest measure of prosperity and success, both of which seem assured. I am persuaded this great publisher means to be consistently a firm and powerful friend of Atlanta, Georgia, and the whole South, and I well know his ability to do big things in a big way.